nice.
Wow, you're all getting quiet, so that means I guess we're starting. Like, we want to get paid. Come on, guys. I know, that's what's the nice thing about this subject is so many people come because we all want to get paid, which is great. So I don't think our MC is here, so I'm going to be the MC and the moderator. So welcome, everybody. I'm Claire Wasserman, and I'm the founder of Ladies Get Paid. So we are a career development organization that helps women negotiate for pay and for power at work. And we do that through workshops, webinars. We have a major conference every year. And I think the most powerful thing that we do is we have an online network where more than 30,000 women from all over the world basically crowdsource career advice. And there'll be women in Romania talking to women in Oklahoma, talking to women in San Francisco, realizing that the struggle is universal for women. So that's kind of depressing. You recognize that we're all underpaid. We suffer from perfectionism, imposter syndrome, right? But then you realize you're not alone. And that's kind of half depressing, half good, feels good. And I think also what's really meaningful about what these women do and what I hope we do here today is we have no shame in talking about this and that we talk about how much we make, right? How many of you all are comfortable talking about money? Raise your hand, please. Good. Yeah, so it's a little bit more than half. How many of you have asked somebody how much they make? Good, good. So in what we're going to talk about, yes, we'll discuss various online sites you can look at, but that's so uninteresting compared to how you talk to real people. And in particular, please remember, talk to white men. They make the most. And that's something we have to remind women in our community. Seriously, because these women are sharing, and that's fabulous, but I have to jump in and go, well, please remember to talk to men, too, because we're all underpaid, probably. So speaking of being underpaid, just shout out, how much is the wage gap, cents in the dollar, how much are we making? Yeah, if you're white. Okay. We're laughing, but this is so depressing, my God. Okay, so white women make 78 cents to the dollar, right? But if you are a black woman, you are making closer to 63 cents to the dollar. And Hispanic women are making 55 cents to the dollar. So no matter how much you're making, I think that we have only really progressed as far as the people who are still struggling among us. So I think you have a real responsibility, you know, not just to negotiate for yourself, but do it on behalf of other women. And also, so the reason also that I bring that up is it's systemic, it's huge, it's overwhelming. So then what do you actually do? As an individual, literally, what can you possibly do to combat something that's that big? And I think it's negotiating. That's one step, right? So if I get a raise and you get a raise and you get a raise, okay, collectively, we are moving the needle on the wage gap. That being said, it should not be on us, the underpaid, exhausted people, to change these things, right? We need to get our companies to do the right thing. We need to get government policies to do the right thing, right? So do remember that, you know, change happens from a grassroots level. But if you can also get involved in looking into those policies, both from the company and the government level, you can do way more than just making more money. And I also, just one thing I want to mention before we get started here is last year I traveled the country. I went to 19 cities and I hosted these town halls for women to talk about money. But really it was more than money. It was about worth. And it was, did they recognize their own worth? And then were they advocating for that worth? And then were they being recognized and rewarded for that worth? And yes, that can come in the form of money, but there is so much more you can negotiate. And we'll talk about that too, right? Negotiating for flexibility, things like that, things that make our life meaningful and happy. It's not just about the money, though today it is about the money. And in that conversation, I was really moved by the thought of women gaining power and not waiting for somebody to give it to us. And you can take it, and that's what we're talking about today. So just a quick overview of what we'll be discussing, and then I'll get into the bios. We're going to start with kind of the mindset shift. For those of us who are scared of negotiating, you know, we're worried that we might, you know, jeopardize the relationship that we have with our manager, we might lose our job. I think we can rethink that. So hopefully we can convince you of that. The next thing is market research. What do you actually charge? Where do you look? Right? And making sure that you have more than one number when you go in there, because what happens if they say no? You have to have some backup numbers. The next part, which I actually think is the most important part, is making your case. Because you're not going to get top dollar if you haven't proven to them that you are a top performer, right? Just because you deserve it That's not why you're getting it. We know that's why you should, but you have to be able to tell the story of your accomplishments in a compelling way. And I think, really, it's about demonstrating the impact that you had on the company. Right? So that's something I want to focus on. And then a scenario, you know, a few scenarios here, both for new jobs and for existing jobs. Really, negotiation is negotiation, but there are different things, obviously, that you would consider or say, depending on where you're at. And then, of course, the big question is, what do you do if they say no? Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that we, as amazing as we all are, I'm hoping we don't talk the whole time and that we can get to questions. So along the way, please take notes. So, Ching, we're going to start with you. So Ching Valdezco is the director at ExecCom, where she trains leaders and their teams to present, communicate, influence, and negotiate more effectively. She's helped her clients close deals, get executive approval for their recommendations and projects, win promotions, and negotiate tens of thousands of dollars in raises. Before joining ExecCom, Ching served as director, strategy, and planning at Hewlett-Packard. In 2016, Silicon Valley Business Journal named her one of Silicon Valley's top 100 women of influence. You can see why she was invited. Lori Rudiman is a former... Lori, if you want to raise your hand.
Oh, that's me, everybody.
Yes.
Hi.
Went out of order here. So she is the former human rights... She's a former human resources leader, turned writer, speaker, and entrepreneur who is known for her common sense style and straightforward approach to workplace issues. She is the creator of The Cynical Girl and Punk Rock HR. So I'll have to talk about how you named those.
Websites,
yeah. Yeah, which Forbes named as one of its top 100 websites for women. She also founded Glitchpath, an early-stage tech startup focused on project management. She also started a podcast in April 2018 called Let's Fix Work. She's working on her second book, due out in October 2019. Yeah. Thank you, Lori, for being here. And our last, but very not least at all, Brenda Dulger-Shaken. Did I get it? Okay. This is the scariest part of moderating, is like fucking up people's names. Yeah, because you know you're going to do it, no matter how much you practice here. Is a senior... Can I curse? Oops, sorry, doing it. Okay. Is a senior vice president at State Street Investor Services America, where she is responsible for safekeeping over $1 trillion in customer service assets, providing the highest quality accounting book of records and solution strategies to address gaps in the sector through technology, data, and premium analytical service delivery. Prior to joining State Street, she spent 7 years at IBT and Barclays Global Investors, where she held various positions, including manager of accounting and relationship management. Okay, the hardest part of my job is done. Thank God. Okay. All right, so this is, I'm actually going to open it up to everybody here. And so please jump in if you feel most passionate about answering it. So the mindset of, I'm concerned that if I negotiate, I might not be liked. I might jeopardize this relationship. Is that mindset well-founded? Can I rethink it?
Let me take a stab at it. How many of you heard and loved Brené Brown's keynote this morning?
Right? Yeah, amazing.
She talks to us about vulnerability, and I think that fear is very real in people's minds. When we approach our manager to talk about asking for a promotion or asking for a raise, it's only natural to think, what if, right? And all the things that could possibly go wrong, right? What if I say the wrong thing? What if she takes it the wrong way? What if he gets upset? What if they don't think that I deserve it? And what if I ruin my career by asking this question? So feeling the fear is very natural. At the same time, the fear is somewhat unfounded, and I say that in the sense that most of the time, your manager is more successful when you can be successful. Mm-hmm. When you can take on more responsibilities and grow, that helps your team and the company. How many of us think of negotiation as being this win-lose competitive thing? Mm-hmm. In the movies and TV, that's always how it is. If you can find a way to turn it into a collaboration, you can take it one step further. So as you plan for that conversation, as you think about what to say to your manager, the question's going to be, how can you approach this topic in a way that gets your manager to want to support you? What's in it for them to give you what you're looking for? And how can helping you help the person that you are asking for things from? And if you can approach it with that mindset, you can The fear will still be there, but you can set it aside and you can find a path where the other person is actively helping you, and then it's more of a partnership and there's less reason to be afraid.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's very expensive to lose you.
Yes.
Whether you're a late stage candidate or you've worked there, companies are spending literally billions of dollars. I mean, you can talk about this as well. They're spending so much money to replace talent. If you walk away, think about what they have to say to their boss, too. So they want to make this work also. Does anyone else want to speak on that?
I would just say that, you know, when it comes to the negotiation, it's not as if the conversation starts today and needs to be answered today. It's something that you can have over a longer period of time, making sure that you are, asking, communicating what you want. What your expectations are. I'd like to be to the next level within a certain amount of period of time. And then the dialogue can start with your manager about what things they would like to see you do in order for you to get to that level. And that does create the partnership as you continue to work together to get you to that next level and the compensation that you desire.
I just have one thing to add. I think the currency of business is often likability. And the fact that you are in a position to be afforded an opportunity to get an offer or to get a raise means that they already like you. Mm-hmm. So take some solace in that. I think what happens from the world of human resources and the world of leadership is that we have an individual in front of us whom we like, whom we love, whom we care about. And that person suddenly adopts a persona of a hard-assed negotiator that they've seen on TV. And suddenly, all bets are off. So my advice for you in that situation is to be yourself. Be true to you. Learn great communication skills. Learn great negotiating skills. But don't flip personae and be somebody else just because you think you have to be a hard ass. That's the surefire way to have that negotiation fall apart.
And I think that there's a way to be assertive without being aggressive. Right now, I still don't think it's so much what you say, it's how you say it.
Absolutely.
Because you can be strong with a smile on your face, right, and get what you want. I guess my last question about mindset shift is I think as women, we often feel so grateful for the opportunity, right? I guess that goes back to the fear of losing it. Mm-hmm. What do you do to combat that?
To combat the fear of losing?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And I think we have in our society this fear of failure that's so pervasive. And there's this culture out there that tells you to just drive through the failure and just push through it and it'll be okay and embrace failure. I think there's a midpoint in there. Every negotiation is a risk. Are you going to potentially lose? Maybe. Are you potentially going to leave something on the table? Absolutely. But it's worth trying. It's worth trying because you are of value. It's worth trying because your family is of value. It's worth trying because you don't work for free. And I think that message is incredibly important. We work for a lot of things, for personal fulfillment, for emotional resonance, all of it. But you work for money. And that's something to consider and something to remember.
Mm-hmm. The worst that they can say is no. Mm-hmm. And if they do say no, then that opens the door to other opportunities. You know that you're not going to progress somewhere where you are. So now you understand where your path needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's better than not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
The antidote to fear is practice. How many of you feel uncomfortable talking about your accomplishments and what you've achieved? Do you feel like you're bragging, maybe, when you talk about yourself and what you do well? Mm-hmm. And when we don't do enough of it, it feels really awkward. Mm-hmm. So one thing that you can easily do is think about a story of something that you're really proud of, somebody that you helped, some result that you achieved. And if you're not yet ready to confidently walk in and tell that story to your boss, tell it to a friend. Invite one of your coworkers for coffee or lunch. Just talk to them about that story and get their feedback. And most people will say, wow, that's really great. That's an amazing accomplishment. They'll ask you questions. The more you tell that story, the more comfortable you'll be. Don't let that critical meeting where you're starting to talk about the promotions be the first time that these words come out of your mouth. Right? So find somebody that you trust who'll listen to you and give you feedback. Practice what you're going to say.
I think the strongest negotiators are the ones who are willing and able to walk away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to do that, you need to have savings. You need to be interviewing elsewhere, right? So I guess the other antidote to fear is having backup also. So quick question here. So knowing your number, or excuse me, market research, right? So you're feeling good about going in. You've kind of shifted your mindset here. All right, but you need to figure out how much to actually charge. So Lori, what are some salary resources that you would suggest?
Well, first of all, I have another resource that I just want to give you very quickly. Ching made a really important point about being able to tell your story. And how many of you like book recommendations? A lot of you? Okay. There's a book out there by a woman named Peggy Kloss called Brag, B-R-A-G. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent book that I've recommended in multiple corporations to multiple women and men. Learning how to tell your story is such an important component of negotiations. A lot of times when individuals want to figure out how much a job pays, they'll hit the internet, right? Isn't that what we do for everything these days? And by the way, every job pays between $32,000 and $186,000 on these websites, right? You know, depending on who you are, where you are in the country. The best way to find out how much the job pays is to ask questions. And that means asking questions of people in your network, asking questions even of individuals who used to work at the company, at the organization. And the best way to do that is to leverage your LinkedIn network. Understand who you know through your connections on LinkedIn, who works there, who may work in similar jobs, and be brave, be bold, be courageous, and ask those questions. The only intel that you can rely on is intel from somebody's mouth. And maybe not even then. They may lie to you. But at least you'll have a better sense than going onto one of those rando websites on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And then would you ask, and anybody can answer this, and perhaps Brenda, how do you just ask straight up, how much do you make? And if you're uncomfortable asking that, is there another way that you can talk about money?
Well, I think salary range is always kind of gives that person, mm-hmm. you know, if you're asking someone person to person, salary range for a role similar to yours might anonymize it enough that the person won't feel like that they're sharing their income directly with you. They might not be comfortable with it. Of course, everything is all about art versus science. You might know someone really well who's really happy to brag about how much they make. And so in that case, you can ask someone directly. I think the other thing when it comes to understanding your value and what you're worth is, you know, people, once they find a job, they stop looking for a job. And I learned that a long time ago. And the first time I got brave enough to actually negotiate for my salary, I was frustrated. And so I started looking for another job. And I realized what other people were offering to pay me. And I used that to negotiate for the salary that I wanted and to change the role that I had to be something more along the lines of what I wanted. So it isn't just market research. You can actually go out into the real world and do hands-on research with other organizations. You just have to be prepared for the fact that you might find a job that you love and now you've got to make a change.
I have two questions right off of that. So one, if you're interviewing elsewhere, but you think you're probably not going to take it, you're kind of using it as leverage to bring it back to your company. So the question there is, like, how do you do that kind of tastefully? And then second, if you have used other companies and what they're offering is leverage, do you remember exactly what you said to your manager? Was it literally, I got another offer, what's up? Like, walk us through kind of both sides of that.
Sure. So for me personally, you know, I was very transparent with my manager and I told him the things that I was dissatisfied with. I also let him know that I felt that I knew that I was the most underpaid of the senior reps on his team and I was the woman. And and we have a corporate policy where it's, you know, diversity, you know, you're paid for that diverse skill set and, you know, gender and ethnic diversity. So I was very transparent with him in the very beginning that I was dissatisfied. And then I asked him I didn't need to know what my peers were making, but I wanted him to know. And I asked him to go out and do that research himself and to see if he felt comfortable with what I was getting paid for the work that I was doing in comparison to my peers. So I kind of put it on him in the very beginning. And then I let him know that because our industry is small enough when you get to a certain level that everybody knows what everybody else is doing. So I didn't want him to hear from someone else within the industry that I was interviewing. I wanted him to hear it from me. And so I was transparent with that. And then that kind of lit a fire under him as well. And sometimes, and we'll probably talk about this a little more, when you're negotiating, you need to know your company's policies, mm-hmm. practice, and culture as it relates to compensation. You know, you can go out there and get a job offer and ask to be have that matched in the current role that you have, but if it's during a certain compensation period, if it's during, you know, budget cuts, you know, those might be really bad times for you to do some type of negotiation like that. So timing is everything when you're negotiating, and you need to understand what's okay, what's common practice in your organization, and that's where you need to leverage your internal network as well.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever found out that somebody was making more than you? And then did you bring it up?
I think that has happened to all of us at some point in our career. So that happened to me.
Okay.
And I was one of those people who, during my career at a very large Fortune 50 technology company, was always told that I was a high performer and that I was one of the people who was on that leadership track. And certainly, I felt like I had a lot of opportunity, and I felt I was compensated pretty well. So I would hear these statistics about the pay gap and think, I want to help people that are impacted by that, but I didn't feel like that it was something that was necessarily relevant to me personally. I was a director already, and when I had the opportunity to move to a new role in a new country at headquarters, I was very excited. And as I went through the process of finding my replacement, first of all, my role was split into two director jobs.
That's the first warning sign.
Yes.
That you should be getting more.
It's the first warning sign that maybe, you know, and then, so one of the director jobs, we found a replacement, great person, I really loved her. The second job took a little bit longer to find somebody. We brought someone in from outside the company, and I was part of the interview process to bring him on. And then I was the person who had to explain the compensation package to him and answer his questions. And that's when I realized how much more he was going to be making for doing half of my job. Mm. And that was a big eye-opener for me, because when we think about, you know, for those of us who are in those executive positions, we don't often realize that we are impacted by the same issues. And when I thought back to what was the difference, right? Why is it that somebody who is coming in from outside the company, who didn't have the network, who was going to be doing the exact same work that I was doing, and who didn't have the domain expertise yet, mm-hmm. how could the company value him more than me? And when I thought about it, it was ultimately it came down to how he painted a vision of where he could take the company. Mm. And how he could tell that story of not just what he could do, but how he was the best person to bring that company to that place. We were going to be doing the exact same thing. The plan that I had, the plan that he had, they were very similar. The difference was how he was able to package it and put himself forward and create that value in other people's minds.
Wait, Ching, wasn't the difference also institutional sexism and a total failure of leadership within human resources and the executive team to oversee a policy and a program like that? I mean, yes, I'm sure he created a wonderful vision of what he could do, and I'm sure he was amazing, but that company was bereft, and they are complicit in systemic sexism. And I mean, that's just unacceptable. So many of you in this room may work in human resources, and I hear this story over and over again that HR is changing, HR has woken up, they're aware, and that is largely garbage. While women in HR feel that way, we are as much victims of a system as we are complicit with the system. So one of the things I would say in this room is that you just heard Ching's story. If you ever get a chance to work in human resources, take that secondment and level that department up. Do it, because they really need your help, and they need your domain expertise and they need your support.
Yes, that is very true. So the team that I was in, I was the only woman in a large team. And the way that eventually my situation got resolved was, part of it was I woke up and started to do things differently. But I'm also very grateful that I got the support of our VP of finance, who was a woman, who supported me to get that terrific new assignment, and who helped make sure that I was compensated fairly for the work that I was going to be doing. And so when I moved into that new role with that organizational support now behind me, I could start on a much more level playing field than I had.
And it sounds like she was an ally.
She was.
Yeah. I'm curious, this is a little bit of a tangent, but if any of you all have stories or advice about kind of cultivating allies in your workplace, I mean, building authentic relationships, but knowing when to leverage them also.
Yeah, I think that that absolutely is true. You know, HR always has a voice. And, you know, I work in the business. That's where I focus. I have a large team that I try to manage. But I do have to leverage my HR counterparts about what seems reasonable and what seems normal and what's within our own culture. But what I have also seen is that leveraging allies in men. You know, we have some great men that I work with who take roles in the diversity committee where they really want to understand what it is that they're doing. And I have a great example of one of the senior people on our team. He had two people that he was promoting into equal roles. And the compensation came back. And for the man, he had a higher salary. But, you know, his percentage from where he was to where he was going was less. And then the woman, they gave her the same percentage, but she was still lower than him. And he went back and fought. And he said, you know, I don't care if they're both promoting at the same time and that their percentages are different. She needs to have the equal value that he is because they're both brand new at the same time and moment moving into this additional responsibility. Why should they be paid any different? And he advocated for that and really put a very strong point on it. And everyone agreed. But it was so obvious when it was done. But when it first came up, it could have been glossed over and she would have been underpaid.
Male allies are so incredibly important. You know, I thought a lot of this garbage would end when I left corporate America. I thought I'm starting my own business, I'm my own woman, and I'm going to write and speak and create a company, and, you know, it's just going to be great. And I found out that event planners systematically pay women public speakers less than they pay male public speakers. And so what I've done is I have a group of five dudes that I hang out with. And every time they get a public speaking gig, they tell me how much it pays. And so now I know previously what they are on record paying, and I can ask for that going forward. And I can actually say, you know, I know how much you paid my friend Tim Sackett last year, and I'm a little disappointed at this number, right? Like, I have data, and I have a group of individuals who also have my back. So I love men, right? I love them so dearly that I want to pull them in and have them help me be a part of this journey, and they haven't disappointed me yet. So reach out to the men on your team. They'll be helpful.
I think even just saying, I'm disappointed, God, that is like the worst when somebody says that.
To my HR lady talk. I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. Now I know why you called, you have a company called The Cynical Girl.
Yeah.
And let, you know, kind of stay angry, let your frustration be your fuel, I think.
Yeah.
I just know how to channel that into getting more. I'd love to talk a little bit about negotiating for things other than money. So in kind of HR parlance, this is called full compensation, which is a good word to bring up, too, when you're talking about it, to say, I'd like to discuss my full comp package, because that demonstrates to them you know what you're talking about. You've done your research. So what are things that you can negotiate that is not money, but also when do you bring that up during the negotiation?
Things that you can negotiate that are not money, and this applies not just to negotiating a new job or promotion, but really any aspect of negotiating. We teach in our workshops this concept of currencies. And currencies are not just money, they're everything that you can trade or exchange in a negotiation. So they're things that you could potentially offer the other party, but they're also things that potentially the other party might want from you, right? Things that they might be asking for from you. So if you are let's say, preparing to move into a new role or maybe getting promoted at the same company, salary is definitely an important component. But you might also think about title. How important is that to you? How much vacation do you get? Support for professional development or coming to conferences like Watermark, bonuses, flexibility in your schedule. The longer your list of currencies, the more likely it is that you and HR will be able to find some common ground. Because if there's only one thing that you want, if the only thing that you want is money, there's more of a chance that you're going to hit a deadlock. And the great thing is, even if they can't give you what you're looking for, it can help you with the salary piece of it. So let's say you got to some place, a number and salary wasn't quite the one that you wanted, so you ask for more vacation, and maybe they can give you the vacation, which is, if they can, really great. If they can't give you the vacation, what do you think they might say? They might say, we can't give you 4 weeks. Would you be willing to take 2 weeks of extra salary? Would you say yes to that? Maybe you would. It gives you a lot more options.
Mm-hmm. And would you say you bring that up after you've decided on the money?
The best time, well, there's two things. One is, all throughout the process, ask questions.
Yes.
Learn as much as you can right from the beginning. Learn as much as you can about the company, their policies, what it's like there. Talk to people who work there, ask HR, read up on their benefits package if you can. So learn as much information as you can all throughout the process. And then the best time to have the conversation about what you're worth is after they've said they've already said that they want you, before you say yes. Mm-hmm. So if the first thing that the recruiter asks you when they get you on the phone is, what's your desired salary and compensation package? That's too early. Why? They haven't established that they want you. You have the most leverage when they've said they want you. You haven't yet said yes. Because when you've already said yes, then what? You've lost all the power. Mm-hmm. So wait until they said, we think you are the best candidate for the job. We would love to have you on board. That is the perfect time for you to have that conversation.
So I'm jumping ahead here, but this, you reminded me of a question. So it's a new job conversation, and they ask you, how much do you want to make? And they ask you that pretty early on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Anybody, any takers?
I'm always happy to defer an answer to that question. There's a lot of different language that you can use, and Ching is the expert here on the panel on the specific language. But you never have to answer a question just because somebody asked it of you.
How do you say no to answering that question?
One thing that's worked really well for me, and the advice that I give the women that I coach, if the first thing the recruiter says is, what's your desired salary or compensation, or if they ask, what are you currently making now, which in California they are not allowed to ask you, please know that. So if they ask that, I might say something like, I'm sure as we continue to go through the process that we'll be able to come to a number that works well for both of us. For now, I'd like to start with understanding more about the role and making sure that I'm a good fit for you and that the role is a good fit for me. And then I ask them a question.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So ask them something about the role, ask them something that helps you establish your value.
It's called the artful dodge, right?
Yes.
It's, and politicians use it all the time. If you listen to what the question that's being asked, a lot of times people don't actually answer that question. They answer the question, or they answer in the way that they want to answer. So you're dodging the question completely. You're diverting the conversation away from that compensation topic. And, you know, some recruiters are very skilled and they'll go back to it. But then you are more direct in saying, it's not something I want to talk about right now.
I also think you can say, this is the research that I did. This is what I found in the market. It's a range. It's called a pay band. I would, of course, be asking for the top of that pay band because I'm a top performer. So again, you're just acknowledging that this is not emotional. This is the research. This is what you found. What are you going to do about it? Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's quite all right. I think you'll know a lot about the company, the culture, the organization by the questions that are asked of you early on. And I think there are multiple people you may touch in your job search. So there are executive recruiters who are like, we know what this job pays. We know all the benefits. We gotcha. We're your talent agent. Then there are third-party recruiters who many of you will work with who kind of know what the company is looking to pay, kind of know the company's agenda, and are a bridge between you and the organization. Then there are internal HR people, sometimes called business partners, sometimes called recruiters, talent acquisition specialists, and they work for the organization. So I think it's, again, really important to listen to the questions that are being asked of you, understand everybody's role in the negotiation process, and then to Ching and Brenda's point, really hear what's being asked, and if you're not comfortable asking, deflect and follow up with another question. I love that advice. That was just genius. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Laura, you talked about likability, right, being a critical currency in business, and showing that good faith during the negotiation can go a long way towards getting the other person to want to help you. One of the fundamental principles in negotiating is it's really not about you. You're a more effective influencer and negotiator when you can focus less on yourself and more on the other person. So when I think about a recruiter or a manager who's asking that question, when they ask you what compensation are you looking for, many times what they're really asking is, we don't want to have to go through all the effort of interviewing and get to the end of the process, only to find that we've wasted our time because this candidate is too far out of the range.
And also, right. You've wasted your own
time. So I don't want to waste my time either. And if I can acknowledge that in a way that is positive and collaborative, and I can say, I appreciate the fact that you wouldn't want to waste your time, I don't want to waste my time either, and let's see whether we have some range that we might be able to agree upon. Tell me a bit about the range that the company has planned for this position. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you can put it back on them, and again, in California, they are required to tell you the range.
Mm-hmm. I hate this game of chicken that they play.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Do you have a thought about salary transparency at companies? So the various companies out there who decide to make it known how much everybody's being paid. I think Salesforce did that. And then after it became transparent, Reid Hoffman said, well, we got to, I don't know if it was Reid Hoffman, but we have to pay everybody equally. And then he changed, then he upped the women's salaries. For those in HR, I guess I'm looking at you here, yeah. Lori, is it controversial to institute a policy of pay transparency? Will that breed resentment?
Yeah, there are some individuals out there, some psychologists who believe just kind of like nutritional labels tell you everything that's in a bag of potato chips.
I don't want to know.
Right? Doesn't mean you're going to make good decisions. And so we may have pay transparency, but it may not really drive us all to an equal playing field. And I think that's yet to be borne out. But I think there is a new trend that I'd like to share with the room in human resources, and that is a trend called first, best, and final. So companies are now offering, at least to director level and below, their first, their best, and their final offer. And they will tell you that they're doing that, hopefully, because they have done the research. They have gone to Radford. They've gone to Watson Towers Willis. They've gone to all the different data sources out there. They've put together an offer that they feel addresses pay inequality, addresses gender disparity, and they are not going to negotiate. So I think a good question for you is if you are presented with an offer and you don't know if it's first, best, and final, you can ask some questions to get to that. But more and more, recruiters are actually saying to individuals like you, this is our offer, it's our first, best, and final. And they mean it. They mean it, absolutely. So new trend in 2019.
Mm-hmm. But the rule of thought that I understood is everything's negotiable, and you've got to try, otherwise you'll regret it. So at that point, would you, I guess, believe that they're saying that in good faith and then try to negotiate for full compensation, or you just simply say okay?
No, you never say okay, but I think you ask the question, is it first, best, final? Is there any room? And one of the things we talked about is negotiating beforehand so you don't get an offer that's first, best, and final. And I read a book called Ambition Redefined by Catherine Solman. And I don't know how many of you have read that book. It's excellent. But in that book, 80% of companies have workforce flexibility. I would have never thought that number would be true, but 80%, and that's small and big businesses alike. So again, it's about getting to the offer stage where you know a lot about the company, you've asked a lot of questions so that you don't get surprised by a first, best, and final offer.
Ching, you mentioned the word likability. Mm-hmm. So I'd love you all to talk about what's called the double bind, right? Mm-hmm. What is the double bind and how do you combat it?
It's like walking that tightrope, right? As women, and this is something that we feel all the time, you don't want to be seen as too friendly, too nice, too soft, and maybe be perceived as a pushover in your interactions. At the same time, we also don't want to come across too aggressive, too hard. Lots of words that people use to describe women on that side of the spectrum, right? How do you find that balance? And it's interesting that the more power and influence you have, the wider that acceptable range is. Think about the kinds of behaviors that we accept and take for granted from people that we perceive to be powerful versus when we are in a position where we have little power or influence or people see us as having little power or influence, that range becomes really narrow. And you are literally walking a tightrope of having to hit exactly the right mark all the time.
Mm-hmm. Just want to correct myself. I said Reid Hoffman. I meant Mark Benioff. I'm like, white guy, I don't know. Okay. No, he did a good thing. And also, by the way, you know, when you're negotiating, I would look at competitors to that company, and you can always bring them up because, you know, especially in Silicon Valley, these companies are poaching each other's talent beyond belief. So kind of like playing to their ego a little bit. You know, I did my research. I saw that Salesforce has this policy. That's not something you do here. Why? If you're not sure what to ask, just think about the word why. That's probably a good one. Good one to ask. So just to go into scenarios here before we get into questions. So the scenario is it's an existing job, right? Brenda, a question for you. If you've taken on additional responsibilities, when do you negotiate? Do you go and do your thing and then say, look, 6 months, I did this? Or do you try to negotiate right from the beginning when you're given those additional responsibilities?
When the request is made to you to take on additional responsibilities, what I have found is if you do the work and then you try to negotiate, it's too late. And so as you're talking to your manager, as you're talking to whomever it might be about these additional responsibilities, part of the conversation is a compensation discussion. And maybe you do your current workload and then the alternative is instead of adding this to your work, which then I would want extra compensation because that means I'm going to be working harder and longer. If the conversation or the negotiation is, I'll take on this extra work, but this piece of work has to go, I think that's another way, right? Because maybe to you, compensation isn't worth losing time at home, isn't going to help propel your career. So in this case, you're negotiating for things other than salary, but you do it before you take on the work, because after you've done the work, the project is done, you know, maybe they'll send you a little bonus, a little something extra, a pat on the back, but all of that is just a very short-term gain. You would want to be negotiating for additional compensation in your salary that can last for years to come.
Also, I think oftentimes, maybe all of us, but women in particular, we're told, well, we can't give you more money, but you'll get a title change. Though, Cheng, you did mention that that is a good thing, right? Because you can then leverage that for future jobs. Mm-hmm. But should you just accept a title change? Because technically that title is correlated with a different pay band in the market.
Right. Yes,
so it's
right.
Kind of bullshit.
Right.
Yes.
So what do you do when they're like, but here's a good title, and you're like, that does not pay my rent?
Yeah. It's another thing that has happened to me in my career. So I had a manager who I really respected and who I really liked and who actually I felt was very much an advocate for me, a coach and a mentor, and very much somebody I would count in that male allies box. And he had a very frank conversation with me about how he felt I was his top performer, but he couldn't get me a raise. There just wasn't the money. And the company wasn't doing raises that year. I was a manager, so I knew it myself. I didn't have the money to give my team raises. And it got to the point where, because he supported me and wanted me to be successful in my career, he suggested I should maybe be looking outside the company to find something that would help give me that bump and then come back maybe later. Which, at the time, it was early in my career, and I thought, wow, you know, he's really looking out for me. What I realized later on, and again, I was very lucky to have had the support of a woman VP who was influential and who knew how things worked. She could figure out that, yes, there is almost always an exception process, and she knew the people to go to, and she had the executive support, and she went to bat for me and was able to get me that unicorn when nobody else in the company is getting a raise. She got me a pretty substantial double-digit increase.
Wow.
So no doesn't always mean no, and when somebody says no, it's not necessarily that they don't want to help you. It may be they genuinely do, but they may not be the right person. And as you look for mentors, allies, advocates, look for not just the people who love you and support you, but find somebody who has the clout and the influence to make things happen in the organization. And that's going to be your path to get.
And I think a way of cultivating relationships with influential people is actually being explicit about, I want to be a leader here.
Yes.
I want to grow, right? How do I do that? You've done it. I'd love to learn from you. So it's not just kind of like skirting around. It's being explicit that you would like to grow, aka get more money, and asking people, how should I do that? I just want to move quickly to the new job negotiation scenario. So Lori, what are basic questions that job seekers are allowed to ask HR and hiring managers when you negotiate a salary? Or maybe tell us about like frequently asked questions.
Yeah, I love this question because so often I think that we play the wrong game as job seekers. And we negotiate with the wrong people or we ask the wrong people the wrong questions. And so when you're talking to your contact within human resources, you are absolutely allowed to ask questions about culture, about process, about policy. But for some reason, HR professionals hate when you talk about money. They're uncomfortable with it. I think because there's a weird power dynamic within HR itself, and that's for another day. But what I would recommend is HR is your place for questions about vacation, about PTO, about benefits, all of that kind of stuff. But when it comes to money, when it comes to salary, your questions are best directed to the hiring manager in that chain of command, in my opinion, as well as your network. HR is not the place to go to negotiate your salary.
Good point. So the last question here is, what if they say no? Okay. Can you push back? Literally, what do you say if they say no?
Say no to a salary that you've asked or a raise? Well, I think no is a path, like I said earlier, to an alternative. You know, you can certainly try to bring up your case again, and try to express why it's important and help them to understand that this no has consequences. And if you are willing to accept those consequences, it could mean that I leave. And so I think that is having a very open and frank conversation with your manager about what your expectations are. And that will help them to understand what risk then they are making. And, then managers weigh risks all day long. And if the risk is that if I don't find compensation for this person in some way, then I could lose them. And, you know, maybe they're willing to accept that risk. But if you are that top performer, if you really are key and critical, not only to the business, but just the organization as a whole, then they'll find a way to get you what you need. But you have to be sure to communicate that dissatisfaction, that disappointment.
The other thing that you can do is you can change the conversation. So when somebody says no, don't hear it as no, there's absolutely nothing that we can do. Hear it as no, this particular parameters of requests won't work. We talked about the concept of currencies, right? All the things that you can exchange with the other person. And even in a situation where it is the first, best, and final offer, they're making that offer based on a set of facts that they believe about you and what you can do, what the job entails. If you can change some of those things, you can find a way to reopen the discussion and figure out what would it take for them to be able to say yes to you. What would it take? Give them a reason that allows them to say yes. It might be coming back and changing the scope of the job. It might be changing some of the terms that you're talking about. That makes it a new conversation and not just yes, no, back and forth on the original question.
Mm-hmm. When can you ask again?
So, for the example that Laurie gave was a really good one, right? If HR has said no to you on something, or the hiring manager has said, you know what, for the job that we've currently got posted, this is the pay range, you are here, we just can't close that gap. I've had that conversation with somebody I was hiring, and I really liked her, and I thought she would be a great addition to the team. So we talked about, okay, what else can you do? And armed with that more information about her capabilities, I could then go back to HR and said, we leveled this job at, let's call it level 3.
Right.
We really should be maybe level 4 because I could really use somebody at that level in my team, and I think she would be great for that position. And that's how we were finally able to get the approval to pay what she was looking for, was to expand the scope of the job.
That's great. Yeah. I'd love to open it up for questions. Two notes here. This is not a personal coaching session, nor is it a therapy session. We are not licensed. So try to ask something that's as universal as possible. Second, make sure it's a question. So it means it has to have an question mark at the end, so it's no comments. We're happy to talk to you all after. So let's do about eight to 9 minutes of questions. Yes, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
My name's Tanya Beat. I actually work for the County of San Mateo, so civil service is a little bit different. But I've worked with a lot of young women who I call first-generation college students, let's just say. They're first in their family to get their degree, typically women of color, and they go into their first job and they're blown away. They're like, holy crap, I've never made this much money. My parents have never made this much money. I'm the breadwinner now in my family. I'm grateful. I accepted the position as is because I was blown away. And they don't have necessarily a group of people that they can talk to necessarily about what's next. And they find themselves after 2 years like, I'm just in this cycle. How can you help those first generation women of color not only ask for what they deserve, but even more so, because more than likely that's still equitable to their white counterparts.
And I think a good thing that you're also asking is, can you even negotiate your first job too?
Yeah.
For everybody, because so often we feel like we have no experience to even leverage. Does anyone feel passionate about answering this question?
Well, I would just say, you know, one of the best things that senior people can do is mentor, you know, the younger folks, you know, and that can be in a variety of ways. Formal mentoring programs through your organization. It could also be through, you know, roundtable or lean-in circles, things that, you know, speed mentoring events, even just organizing things for the professional women within your organization to talk to them about negotiation and mentoring and, you know, finding a sponsor, someone that can help introduce you to other folks within your organization. I think that's kind of a responsibility of a senior person within the organization, is to bring up that next generation of women and pay it forward.
I'd love to take a next question on this side.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question around the negotiation process. I feel like there's sort of a fundamental assumption that both sides of the table are doing their research and have an understanding of the market and are rational. I have a question about dealing with an irrational negotiator who is not doing market research.
I think that was actually something you mentioned to me. What do you do when you negotiate with somebody who's unreasonable or
right.
has a style different than yours?
Because it happens to all of us, right? And it's not just salary. Sometimes it's just an argument with your boss and or somebody's just being completely unreasonable, what do you do? When we think about currencies, know that the feeling of coming out on top is also kind of a currency. So when you find yourself in a discussion with somebody like that, how can you let them feel like they won something out of it? And if you can make them feel good about having come out on top about something, it makes it easier for them to give you the stuff that's really important to you. Well, if you're trying to move to a new role or you need support from your boss to promote you out of that team, how can you help them feel like it was their idea? The more ownership they feel, the more likely it is that you'll get the support.
And someone like that, you always ask for more than what you really want, because then they're going to take some away. You'll get exactly what you want, but they'll feel like that they won in the negotiation.
That's a great.
I just want to say I'm sorry for your work experience. Work is so broken, and I think we fix work by fixing ourselves. So if you're in that situation, also, it's really important to deprioritize corporate interests sometimes and really be an advocate for yourself. And we talked about likability. The most important likability is you liking yourself, you loving yourself. No matter what your job says, no matter what your job tells you, you are important and you are worth every penny you think you're worth. And I'm just so sorry you're having
this. Thank you. It's a great job. It's okay. Just the pay. Yeah. Thank you.
I'd love to take a question in the back.
Yeah, thanks. And great conversation. Thank you for providing such valuable tools for us. My question is, and I wrote it down, so I'm very specific. How do you negotiate or ask for specific salary when there is no one else like you or no one else specialized like you, such as a trailblazer? And I'm probably one of them. So I need the advice to also provide to other people because we're all so niche these days and so multi-passionate. So any advice?
I'm going to jump in quickly here. Yeah. So one of my previous titles was Master of Ceremonies, which looked really good on a business card because it was a conversation starter. But like, how do you do the market research for something like that? So hopefully this advice can speak to what you're asking. So what I did was I looked at sort of weekly, monthly, you know, quarterly. What was I actually doing? My job, you could really break it down by, well, this percentage is account management. This percentage is creative director or whatever. So can you sort of chunk up what you do and try to find a traditional title to associate with each of those responsibilities? Now, it's not a formula, but what I did then was I looked at the market research for each of those jobs, you know, the compensation correlated with each of those job titles, and I came up with something. And I think what was important about that was I could defend it. So I could say, you know I do a range of things here. It was obviously difficult to do the market research, but here's what I found and here's how I did it. So at least there's a starting point to a conversation and you're beginning really strong. Other than that, it's just searching for, you know, if you do something very, very specialized, you know, you're going to have to get more creative and take longer to find people who can give you advice.
Yeah.
Does that answer?
I mean, that's why it's hard, because there is no good answer.
Right. But I think you have more earning power.
But I think,
power.
You know, as technology increases, there's just so many different unique roles out there now, for especially for women who are trailblazing. And there is no one else like us. So I just thought that I would give it to the experts. And it makes me feel better that there is no formula.
Yeah. And also, why don't you just go super high and say, because I'm a trailblazer, now what? Also, what market research can they do if you're a trailblazer?
Exactly.
It goes on both sides. We're going to take this one, and then woman in the lovely red, and then I have to go speak on another panel, so y'all can keep talking. Okay.
I'll try to be quick. Thank you so much for being here. This has been great. I have a question about when you go to another company to receive a competitive job offer, when you're gainfully employed, you want to use the competitive offer as leverage. I'm concerned that my current company would see that as me being disloyal, or that might change my relationship with my boss if she knows I'm willing to look elsewhere. And even if I might not think I'm going to take that, I'm at least open enough to it to go through the full job interview process.
I'm going to answer your question with a question. Do they do layoffs at your company?
No.
Do they fire people?
Occasionally.
Does that mean they're disloyal to the employees?
No.
No. So you're not being disloyal. Loyalty, you can have loyalty to your manager because maybe you have a personal connection with them or someone on your team, but you're talking about a corporation, a corporate entity. It doesn't understand loyalty. It understands earnings. It understands the mission.
Well, and wait, it understands one-sided loyalty. That's for sure. And I think that's what you're asking for. And I think the language you use, and certainly I would recommend you connect with Ching, there's a way to speak about your experience in the market in a way that's gentle and deferential and respectful, but shows that there is demand for your skills in the market and that your company ought to be paying attention to that. But you're absolutely right to be worried because behind your back, they're like, blah, blah, blah about you. Mm. And it's a valid concern.
And there are two things that I would say is I really, really want to stay here. But so expressing appreciation.
I wish I could.
Yeah. And then the second part is a question to them. What would you do in my position? Because she also has a boss and she also looks elsewhere. Yeah. So, and also it shows that you like look up to her and want her advice, right? So turn, and that kind of goes back to some of the stuff we've been saying is, can you actually ask a question back? And our last, speaking of questions, our last one.
Hi. I remember reading about 5 years ago an interesting article about if you ask for more money, are you more likely to have the offer withdrawn, or are they willing to just, you know, would they be unwilling to hire you if you did ask for more money? And they broke, they started out by saying, generally, if they like you, no. But the one exception was for women, if they thought that maybe you were asking too, way too much, and they thought it was unreasonable. So I have two questions. First of all, do you think that that's still true? And second of all, how should we all handle that in the workplace? I thought about when you were talking about how people should not assume an obnoxious personality in the negotiation, that maybe we're less adept at that, but I don't really think that's it. But it occurred to me that maybe that's a possibility for why that would be true. But I
have not heard that statistic, but I think negotiations are a gamble just in general. And again, you've heard a lot of really good advice today about how to structure the negotiation, about how to ask questions to make sure you don't put yourself in a vulnerable role where they're just going to rip the rug out from under you and rescind the offer. I have only rescinded maybe a handful of offers in my life, and they were rescinded based on background checks. That's it.
Good to know. Thank you. That makes me feel better.
And also pay attention to how they negotiate with you, because whatever that feels like, that's going to be the relationship you have. So if it feels uncomfortable, if you feel like they might rip the rug under you, that's not setting a good foundation for a good relationship with. It's not a company you want to work for.
Yeah, it occurred to me that maybe that's the warning label if that's the way they would act toward you.
So I guess as you're all just running out, I'd love us just to say how you can find us and follow up with us. So ladiesgetpaid.com, you're going to see how to sign up, and I'll add you to our social network.
Right. ChingValdezco.com or on Twitter.
I'm on LinkedIn, Brenda Dolger-Shaken.
You can find me by Googling I hate HR.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.